Thank you for reading that, Peter. If you're a visitor today, I'm Alan Anzai. I'm one of our church members. I'm not a formal pastor, but I'm excited to give this talk. You may wonder, if you're not a runner, like, what am I going to get out of this? I'm hoping that I can convince you of the importance of exercise, how vital it is, and then also having a passion for something that you enjoy, but also how it applies broader to us as Christians. So if you're not a runner, you can substitute whatever your passion is. So if you're a pianist or musician, whatever your particular thing that brings you joy when you hear this talk. And then also, if you can't exercise, you know, if you're at that stage of life or you have something where you can't run, I think walking is probably the most important thing that you can do if you can. And if you can't walk, using your arms or some type of activity. From a medical doctor perspective, my patients that tend to do the best and have longevity are those that keep active. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that and how it applies within that. I've given permission to my Sabbath school. I teach the early teen class to call me out if I forget to say something. I love teaching the early teen students. They gave me a lot of ideas, even before the sermon, about stuff that we talk about and how it applies to all of us. So hopefully you can learn that. And I put this initial slide up so people, you know, get a laugh that's actually me when I was in eighth grade, had a lot of hair. Those days are long gone. So I realize, you know, my time will come as far as running, that when I won't be able to do it anymore. But I do hope to keep walking or stay active, and to use all of the gifts that God has blessed me with. And I hope that will encourage all of you to use what God has given you. And so to start out, I'd like to just tell you a brief story. Oh, I got this upside down. A brief story about my dad. And so some of you may have met him. He visits from time to time. He was a career Air Force colonel. He wasn't actually a physician, but he was a hospital administrator. So he was in charge of the clinics and hospitals, did well in the military, he was a strong influence in my life growing up. He was actually a pretty good runner when he was in Hawaii. When he was in high school, he got injured, so he didn't. I think he wanted to win the state championships, but he got hurt. But he did pretty well in college and later on. And then he coached either formally or informally throughout his career in the Air Force. So I came into existence in Japan. I'm Japanese, but I'm fourth generation, so I don't speak any Japanese. My parents, my great-grandfather moved to Hawaii in the early 1900s, but my father was born in Hawaii, and that happened to be his first assignment, was in Misawa Air Base, Japan. And I do have to also give a disclaimer for the story I'm going to tell soon to my young students. Please do not do what I did. So that's the advance warning. My story, personal day of infamy. If you look here on the slide on the top left, that body of water, if any of you have been to Honolulu, that's actually where Pearl Harbor is. And so we were stationed on this military base called Hickam Air Force Base. So on the top left of your screen is Pearl Harbor, and there's the USS Arizona Memorial, the very famous memorial that marked the beginning of World War II for the Americans joining the war. And we lived like basically really close, like next door to there on Hickam Air Force Base. And there was this track there that I had this experience with my dad. I think I was about in fourth grade. I was about 8 or 9 years old. I really like sports. I like basketball, football. I wasn't that good. I was kind of small compared to the other kids. But I think my dad, being a good runner, knew I was going to be, or he thought I could be a good runner one day. So he actually went to the track with me and told me to run, you know, about 4 laps, I think a mile. And at the time, I didn't run, so it's painful. It's really hard. And so by the third lap, I told my dad, you know, I'm kind of tired. I don't want to do this. And he told me, you know, son, I told you to do 4. I think you can do 4. Go do the other, you know, last lap. And so I grudgingly said, okay, and ran. But as I ran, I subtly dropped my hand, or I thought it was subtle. I dropped my hand, and I gave him the universal signal of disapproval. And that didn't, you know, I thought it was subtle, but I heard this, ow! And I turned around and I go, oh no, I'm in trouble. And so my dad said, come here. And I go, oh, I'm good. And this was before they had, you know, a lot of the stuff we know about not hitting your kids and all that stuff. Fortunately, he didn't hit me, and he didn't yell at me, and I was totally surprised. He goes, son, I saw what you did. That's very disrespectful. You should never, ever do that to anybody, but especially not me. And because you did that, guess what? You get to run 3 more laps. And so I'm crying, and just, you know, the whole time I'm just thinking, oh, my dad is so mean. I can't stand it. When I'm older, I'm never going to run again. This really is terrible. I don't know why he wants me to run just because he likes to run. It's not fair. I think after that, he kind of backed off. So he didn't really make me run when I was in elementary. But I think the point of that story, you know, is that you have more in you than you think. So my dad realized I had the potential. I just wasn't ready at the time. And my dad, you know, was a coach his whole career or throughout his life. And I think for a coach, finding the right time with your athlete or your student, that's part of being a coach. So I think he was good at that. For a coach, their dream is when you have someone with talent and that person listens to you, that person becomes the champion or that person does really well. The biggest frustrator for a coach is if you have someone with talent and they don't take your advice. And often that's parenting, right? But that's a frustrator. But for my dad, he's coached successful runners. But I think the thing that gives him the biggest joy is when he gets those kids that maybe not that talented, but have a lot of enthusiasm and want to get better and put the work in. That's the thing that gives him the biggest joy, especially when those kids improve. So it's not, you know, beating everybody else. It's what they can do and living up to the potential that God has given them. And so some of you, the older folks may know this. I don't know if they've made a remake of this movie or not, but this is one of my favorite movies when I was a kid called Grease. And the main hero is, I forget the character's name, but that's John Travolta, and I think his name is Danny. And he's trying to impress the girl, Olivia Newton-John. And, you know, he's kind of not really athletic, and he goes out for all these sports and gets in a fight when he's in wrestling and gets in a fight when he's in trying out for the baseball team. And finally the coach realizes, you know, hey, why don't you try long distance running? And that, you know, you can take your aggression out, and it actually works. He ends up getting a letter. Doesn't end up impressing the girl with that, but that's I think how I ended up in running. I wasn't that great in the other sports. And so fast forward to when I was in about 7th or 8th grade, my dad got stationed in Germany. And so at that time, you know, I think he thought, okay, you're growing up, then they actually have a track team in junior high, so you can try out for that. And again, the same old thing, you know, you should go out for track. I think you're going to be a good runner. And of course, I didn't like running, and so I didn't think that was a good idea. And so he basically would take me on the runs. And I'm a little bit, to this day, you can ask my family, I'm a little bit scared of the dark. And we lived right next to this really nice forest in Germany, right outside the base. And so there's all these, you know, nice pine trees. And if you can think of Hansel and Gretel and some of those stories you heard as a kid. And so nobody out there, there's these thick trees. And so my dad would run ahead of me if I was running too slow, and sometimes hide. And then if I was running slow, he'd jump out and scare me when I was running. So I would be running in the forest and looking for my dad and just hating running for the first 6 months or so. And my dad is super competitive. To this day, I have not beaten him in any sport except for running. But in eighth grade, something weird happened. I think as I was growing, you know, my body changed, and suddenly the running wasn't as difficult for me. And then one day, I happened to actually beat him. And then the next day, I beat him more. And, you know, within about a week or two, I didn't even see him anymore. After that, we stopped running together because I think he couldn't stand than it being. But after that, it was a transformation. I actually liked running now because it was like, wow, this is great, and I can beat my dad. And so that was my genesis into a runner. Subsequently to that, we moved to Hawaii. I actually became a pretty good runner in high school, to the point where I was, usually placing in the state meets. I never quite was the top guy until my senior year. Everything kind of came together. And so my senior year, I was actually favored to win the cross-country meet. But there was a new kid that came that was really good, and he really pushed me to the brink of things. The time of the state championship, I had ran against him about 2 weeks before and barely beat him. And the state championship was on his home island. I'm from the island of Oahu, and he was on the island of Maui. And that day was really hot. So for Hawaii, it was in the 90s with humidity, like 100% humidity, and really, really hot. And so that day, it was so hot that some of the people in the last 100 meters, collapsed and didn't finish. But it was basically his home crowd, and during that race, he ran out ahead of me, and about half a mile to go, he took off, and I basically for a brief few seconds, said, "Oh man, I've given everything I got. I'm not strong enough." But something came over me after that initial moment, and I think the Holy Spirit, or more likely, I think my dad's influence over the years, and I could hear him yelling. And all that training and stuff. And so something kicked in. I don't really, unfortunately, remember that last quarter mile, but I was fortunate to be able to sprint past him in the last weaning moment of that. When I hit the finish line, I collapsed. They gave me oxygen and water and stuff. And then after the race, this is one of my favorite pictures. That one of the news reporters took, and so is my dad. I think just the joy that I had lived up to my potential. Unfortunately, I don't remember that. But from that experience, it was it's one of those things like we talked about in the scripture earlier, right? You run for this crown your whole life, and then you get it, and great, but life goes on. And so I think that perspective of, especially when we're younger and we have goals like what you want out of life, isn't exactly what God wants us for life, wants for our life. And so there's a bigger race to run, not just these individual races or individual glory. Fortunately for me, I was able, because of my running, it helped me get into the Air Force Academy. And so I actually ran in college. So I learned a lot of lessons throughout my life from running, and I've had a lot of blessings from them. I think it's God's way of showing me the way, both good things and bad things. And so in college, when I ran, and it was actually a blessing for me, because in high school, I was always trying to be the top number one person and putting pressure on myself, and always wanted to be perfect. College, I got a rude awakening my first year. We ran against some teams that in Colorado that were really, really good, that had some national champions and really good runners. And so my first race in college, like this one team, like all of their guys, their A team and their B team beat all of our guys. And so I realized very quickly that I was not going to be a professional runner and that I should focus on studying so I could get a job so I could hopefully meet my wife and that kind of stuff in the future. And so that's what it did. It was actually really kind of a relief for me, though, too. And I think that's where you learn the lesson. Like, I think one of the biggest things that we see in human nature just throughout, right, and then teach this to my Sabbath school classes, the 10th commandment. It's probably the hardest thing we struggle with is when we try to compare ourselves to other people and we covet what other people want, whether it's they're good at this or they have this money or power or fame, and that's the wrong path. So I think that's why I put that X at the end of that thing, is that being happy with what you have and using the talents that God has given you to your maximum. I think that's what he wants for us in our personal lives, but also in witnessing to others. I apologize again for some of the next slides coming up. A lot of them are commercials, or not commercials, but ads from these running companies, but I think they hit it on the head a lot. So I like a lot of the Nike commercials. This is one of my favorite ones from Nike about 20, 30 years ago. The print's kind of small, so I'll read it here. But it says, there are clubs you can't belong to, neighborhoods you can't live in, schools you can't get into, but the roads are always open. Just do it. And I love this picture because it shows this woman running in the field, but there's also the church in there. And that's, you know, I think an analogy for our church, right? So God doesn't care how much money you have or what your position is or your job or what you've done in the past or you've won this or you're the top person in that. That doesn't matter. And I think for Christians and for our church, I think that's the beauty, is that we're all part of the same church and we're all the same. We're all God's children. The next part of my story, after Air Force Academy, I was fortunate to get a scholarship to go to Loma Linda. And I didn't know about Loma Linda, just very superficially, but my parents happened to live there. And for me, that was a blessing. And so it was a little bit of a surprise when I went to the cafeteria the first time to go get a hamburger and some coffee. And they didn't have that at the Loma Linda cafeteria at the time. And I was like, whoa, what is going on here? And hearing about Ellen White and some of the other stuff, and like, you know, school shuts down at on Fridays and you don't do anything on Saturday. That was very weird, to be honest, for me. But as I got to know my fellow classmates and the culture at Loma Linda, it just was really life-changing for me. And as part of the environment at Loma Linda, I think it was validated after I graduated, just nationally, I think more people are aware of the Seventh-day Adventist message. Have any of you heard of the Blue Zones or what that is? I know Chris does and a lot of folks. So the Blue Zones, actually, this author from National Geographic did an article about places in the world where people live longer. And so these places actually have quite a few people that make it over 100 years of age. And it's not the 100 years of age like in a nursing home the last 10 years. It's people being active and doing stuff. So, you know, you can think of Brother Dick West, who passed away this year. He was like the embodiment of this, right? And so this article was really cool. It showed people, and this is actually from this, showed these areas on why do these people live to this age and are still productive and having happy lives. And so he actually wrote a book off of this. And from this, he discovered there were basically five different zones in the world. And the zones are Okinawa, Japan, Ikaria, Greece, Sardinia in Italy, Nicoya, Costa Rica, and Loma Linda, California. And I do this talk to the doctors at work as part of our wellness activities. And so I always present the first other countries, the first four first, because when you look at them, a lot of their cultures, they're basically more rural and they're not very affluent. And so people have to, like, they're not driving a car everywhere and they're not eating steaks and all the processed foods and stuff that we eat every day. And so people go, yeah, that's nice. But then I say, there's actually a city in America that has people like this. And then I show, of course, the information about Loma Linda. Some of the common features that these blue zones have, not only Loma Linda, is that the people are moving and exercising. And it's not necessarily running a marathon or going to the gym. It's actually doing work. Like working, you know, if those of you that grow things or have a garden, you know, Steve had the great message, you know, with the work he does in the school, farming, that stuff where you're actually connected with nature, that is really helpful. And being outside and doing it regularly is one of the most important things. The other thing is having the right outlook. So having a focus or a mission. My patients that do the best when they retire are those that, you know, they may change careers or jobs, but they still have something that they're passionate about. So whether they get involved in their community or whether they're active in the church or have some other thing that they're doing, not just, you know, stop working and playing golf, you know, all the time. I think those are some of the key features. And then also belonging to the right tribe. So there's a concept in Okinawa called a moai, where it's a group of people that grew up together their whole life, and then they go through life together, and they go through the ups and downs in lives. And so certainly as Adventists, we have that within our church and our church members, why we come to Sabbath every week. You know, that's part of the benefit, is having that collective family or an extended family from what we have. And then the last component is eating wisely. So most of these cultures, some of them eat meat and fish, but that's not the main emphasis on the menu. It's mostly plant-based. Of the five, I think we're the only ones that don't drink alcohol. The other ones drink it in small amounts. And so from that, I ended up at Loma Linda. That's the medical center there now. And so that was probably one of the best things that happened to me in my life. And that's when I learned some of the Adventist message. And of course, Loma Linda would not have existed if not for Ellen G. White. And so she was given the vision of health reform in 1863. Sometimes I think, you know, when we read history, we just look at, okay, yeah, 1863, and we don't put it in context with what else was going on in America. But if you can think in the 1860s, what was going on, you know, that was the Civil War. Some of the stuff we're still struggling with today, it was 10 times worse. The states had left the Union and there was an actual civil war going on. And so this is the message, I think, that really resonated with a lot of folks when she got this vision. And you know, to this day, there's a gazillion doctors or pseudo-doctors and authors writing about all this stuff in their individual components about how to improve health. But I think the Adventist message has the whole package for health. So a lot of the diseases I see are diseases of behavior in modern society. And so at the time, the Adventists developed the Battle Creek Sanitarium. And so this actually was a place where people could go and be taught the vegetarian diet. And also smoking was very prevalent, and they didn't know about the long-term effects of tobacco. Or of drinking alcohol, and it actually was able to accommodate 600 patients at a time. It's equivalent to the Weimar Institute today. There's some famous people there. On the bottom left, that's Amelia Earhart, and then the second person is Warren Harding, who is the President of the United States. The third person is Mary Todd Lincoln, that was Abraham Lincoln's widow, and the last person was Johnny Weissmuller. He's an actor and athlete that played Tarzan. The Battle Creek Sanitarium actually burned down, but I think Ellen White had a vision to establish a sanitarium in Southern California. Basically, at that time, there was nothing there. It was, you know, orange groves and nothing, not much else. And so she actually was able to secure property and build, get the College of Medical Evangelists started in 1909, and then it was eventually renamed the Loma Linda School of Medicine in 1961. And so that's where my story takes part again, and that's where I met this young lady who was my classmate. So, you know, I met her, we were classmates in anatomy, you know, kind of morbid, but we met kind of over cadavers, basically. You know, I thought she was cute, smart. We had a joint assignment where we had to visit a patient together, and she was just really kind. And she, you know, we did the assignment. We met this really badly burned patient and talked to him. And you know, most people just do the assignment and they never see that person again. But Xing actually went back and visited him multiple times after that. So I thought she was really sweet. I wanted to ask her out, but it seemed like every weekend she would go back to Los Angeles. So I just assumed she had a boyfriend. But talking to her friends, it turned out her boyfriend was Jesus. And so she was driving like an hour and a half, 2 hours every weekend to go back to church. And so I then I was thinking, well, you know, she's like way too good for me. So she's not going to want to date me. I'm not Adventist. I don't speak Chinese. I just have all the wrong things. But one day she came out to the track. That shirt I'm wearing, it says LL Med School Blues. So a couple of my friends were runners, so we started out this little informal club, and we would run together. and work out each week. So it was a good way to burn off stress. And she came out with one of the other gals, and I saw her running. And there's something, I don't know, primitive about seeing someone you're interested in running around the track. And so at that time, I said, I'm going to ask that girl out. But she was so nerdy, I realized, she's not going to go out with me. Like, we're right going to be studying for boards. And so I happened to have this computer program at the time that would help study for boards. So I invited her over to study that. And, you know, about 10 minutes into it, I started asking her about where she was from and stuff. And then I asked her out to go to a movie. And then after that, I don't really remember. Sort of all the best moments of my life, I don't remember because, I don't know, it just didn't work out. But because of that, I actually, within a month, I realized I wanted to get married. And so we got engaged, and then we got married 2 years later. But as part of that process, and I'm so glad my mother-in-law is here today. She's visiting from Malaysia. Her mother-in-law actually introduced Ching and her family to Adventism when they grew up in Malaysia, and so they joined the church there. But her mother-in-law, you know, I was like, oh, man, they're not going to accept me. I'm like, I don't speak Chinese. I'm like, you know, and she was, they're Taiwanese, and Japan, you know, occupied them in the war. But her parents were actually okay. But one of the criteria, though, was like, boy, he's not Adventist. That's going to be a problem. And so that was, you know, I was telling my Sabbath school class, we were talking about getting baptized and stuff, you know, for the teenagers. And the gist of our baptism was you should not get baptized until you're ready to get baptized. And so until you learn about it, and it should be your choice. I mean, it'll be more sticky. So certainly, I think going through that process before getting married was great, and we had a good pastor. So it was definitely, I think, great to learn about, and I realized that I wanted to do it. And I did have, you know, ulterior motives, of course, having to get baptized to get married. But I think part of what holds a lot of people back from getting baptized or getting fully involved is not, you know, feeling like you're not ready. And it's one of those things, sort of like parenthood. You're never going to be ready, so you just got to do it. And you know, there's a saying in business, fake it till you make it. I think this is one of those things, like all of us in our life, even as we go through here now, you know, take that step. You know, give. If Brent comes up to you and asks you to do a sermon, do the sermon. I learned that from you know, if Rick asks you to do something or volunteer, do it. Same thing with Xing. She does that to people I know to participate in the sermon. Just do it. And so that's the Holy Spirit working through them to get you to do stuff. So anyway, to make a long story short, I digress. We ended up getting married, and so it's the best thing that's happened to me in my life. And we recently celebrated our 30th anniversary. So, yeah. Thank you, Xing. And so the other more tangible benefits of running, you know, this is a joke. I tell my kids and they get annoyed, but I always tell them, I don't have to really outrun the bear. I just need to outrun you. And so I think, you know, the advantages of, and you can replace running with walking or any type of exercise. From the Adventist health study, the Adventists live longer than the general population, both males and females. The vegetarian Adventists actually live quite significantly longer than the non-vegetarians as well. And so that's an informal plug for all the work that Miss Chris and her team do to teach people about healthy cooking and healthy living. The other thing that they found was that people that eat nuts actually had a 50% reduction in heart disease. And then fruits and vegetables, you know, as all of you know, and grains seem to be protective against a wide variety of cancer. Doesn't make you Superman or Superwoman. There are many of our church members that have got cancer that follow this, but it does reduce your risk. The keys from Loma Linda is basically, I think the biggest thing for me is the Sabbath, finding a sanctuary in time. There's a lot of lay books now talking about having a day of rest to reset, to prevent burnout and all of this stuff. It's kind of funny when you see, I mean, not funny, but you're like, you see it, it's like, duh, that's what we do. But people actually market that and sell that to people. And then getting regular moderate exercising, spending time with like-minded friends, giving something back, eating an early light dinner, and putting more plants in your diet, and then drinking plenty of water. Those are the keys. And you look at that, and it doesn't cost a lot of money to do that, right? It's actually saving you money from a lot of stuff that doesn't work. And so from Corinthians, you know, this is, I think most of you know this, about our body being our temple. So really it is something, especially with our lifestyle. If one of the things, you know, people say, well, I don't really care, I'm going to die younger and then I don't have to worry about it. But unfortunately, most people, in my view, this is my own personal opinion, the lucky folks, you know, when you get to a certain stage in your life, you go to bed and then you don't wake up, you know, and you go peacefully. That's only about 10% of people. Everybody else has to go through, you know, cancer or stroke or the debilitation when you get these chronic illnesses. So taking care of your body so that you'll have, you know, your golden years will truly be golden. I think that's the ideal. It would be a lot easier if we all knew how we were going to go, but most of us don't know that. I put this in here, one of the advantages of running or exercising regularly is it does help with weight loss. It doesn't help as much as you think, though. You kind of have to do it, or you really have to do it in conjunction with diet. So I used to run as, you know, and eat whatever I want, wouldn't really put any weight on. But during the pandemic, I started watching, you know, TV and doing stuff with the kids more and eating microwave popcorn and snacks and stuff. And so I put on about 6 or 7 pounds, which for me is a lot. And so, you know, as many of you know, my wife is a master motivator. So one day I had my shirt off and she just walked by and just grabbed my gut and went oink, oink. And it just, like, I was like, whoa. And so it got me motivated to start exercising more and watch what I was eating. And so one of my patients had lost about 30 pounds using this weight loss app called Lose It. And so it just is basically a calorie counter. You put in your food you eat, and then you put your exercise. And so that doing that, I was able to follow that and actually was able to get down and lose weight that I had gained. And then I also got down to basically my college weight. I felt a lot better. I actually ran a lot better doing that just by following that. I think the biggest surprise to me was that even though I run like a lot, that as I got more fit, I wouldn't burn as much calories. So our bodies are designed to preserve calories. And so when you, you know, you really still have to watch what you eat. So it doesn't give you a free pass. When you're in your, you know, teenager and 20s, maybe, but it catches up above that, as all of the adults in the room know, or older adults know. The other advantage of running is that, you know, you get this high from it. You know, when I'm having a bad day or not feeling well, it just helps me, clears my mind. So it's really, really a great thing just to get out and exercise. Of course, even better than exercise, the Holy Spirit, I think, basically does, you know, that plus the added advantages of just decreasing anxiety. My patients that have beliefs or are Christian and follow this, actually, those seem to be the people that do the best during adverse times. Having a moai, this is a group of people that you do stuff with. And so research from the Framingham studies, which study individuals over a long period of time that see their heart and stroke risk, find that certain things like smoking and obesity are contagious. So, you know, some of the things that are not so great for your health. But on the opposite end, if you hang out with people that have similar interests or have the happiness or have a similar passion as you, it actually forces some accountability on you. And that's why we come to church, right? Or part of the reason we come to church is that you create time deliberately ahead of time, and it forces you to be consistent in doing these things. One of the things that helps for me, when I finished my medical training, I actually had not been running during residency. It was very busy. And so I got out of shape, put on, you know, decent amount of weight. But I happened to, when I joined the Air Force, get stationed here in Sacramento. And the guy on the far left is 1 year ahead of me. He's a doctor, and we were both in the Air Force. He actually went to Loma Linda as well. I didn't know him in medical school, so it was just, I think, maybe God getting us together. But his name is Dr. Tim Beamsterfer. And so he, both of us said, you know what, we should really start exercising and do what we're telling our patients to do. And from there, we started running, and then we got, you know, the marathon bug and started doing marathons together. So we run together every week, just once a week together, but it gives us that accountability. And so we've been doing that for, you know, about 27, 28 years. And just doing it consistently, I was a lot faster than him when we started, but, you know, over time, you know, I've gotten injured or more busy, and he has kept it up consistently. So he's way, way faster than me now. I think, you know, God throughout our life, he knows what the race is. He knows what we need to do. He's there with us all the time. And he's given us all the tools to do it. It's just if we choose to use them or not. And then, you know, part of it, and this is with our Christian life too, is having the discipline to do these things regularly. If you try to do these things and haven't been doing the work, it usually doesn't go well for people. This is another one of my favorite movies, Forrest Gump. So stuff happens. So, you know, I think any of us, you know, just life has these unexpected turns, both joyful and sad. So many of us have been afflicted by illness or disease or have lost family members unexpectedly. But, you know, stuff happens. And so I think with God, God with us, and knowing that he has already given his son for us, I think that gives us the strength to carry forward. One of my favorite lines from the Bible is from Ecclesiastes, from Solomon. You know, that the race isn't to the swift or strong, but, you know, it's stuff happens. Time happens to everyone. Time and chance happen to us all. And so without God's message and without God giving us his son, that is a very dismal, dark thing if you don't have hope of a better life. If any of you have run a marathon or any long distance race, there's always a time where you hit the wall. In the marathon specifically, you run out of glycogen, and so it's just a horrible feeling. And so, you know, you have to kind of prepare for that you're gonna be suffering. But the hardest thing, I think, is mentally just keeping going, even when things just seem at their bleakest. And the other thing in races and running, you could see these slides. There's a lot of friction from some of the clothes. And if you've ever watched at the end of the marathon, if someone's wearing a white shirt and someone's a novice and they don't put Band-Aids or they don't put Vaseline, you'll see you know, a lot of bleeding and stuff. I love that Adidas ad on the right with that lady looking at the guy putting the Band-Aids on his parts there. Sometimes I think as Adventists, outsiders look at us like, that's what we are, right? Like, why are you doing that for? But there's a reason, right? We do this because we know what we have to do, and it's hard, and we may be different. And the whole Adidas ad campaign is, you know, called Runners, Yeah, We're Different. And you could almost say that about Seventh-day Adventists, right? If those of you that work outside in the community, people do look at us differently. The other thing is just having the flexibility to adjust to things. We all have a plan of what we want to do, but it's not always God's plan. And so I think having that perspective and not wanting to be in control all the time, and also having that patience with each other. So anytime you're in a group, an organization, there'll be different opinions. I think during the COVID time and stuff, it just really exacerbated a lot of strong emotions in people. But realizing that we're all God's children and that he loves us all. And then having us adapt the perspective from God's point of view as a parent, that we're all his kids, he loves us all, even though we drive him crazy sometimes or drive each other crazy more often, and being able to live with each other despite our differences. You may, you know, the title or hearing about this, like, see, like, what, you know, about running a marathon? Like, I don't think actually marathoning is a great idea. I don't know why I run them. I think it's part of just my friends do it every year, and it just kind of makes me do it. I think if you're going to do one, and just to get it to say you did it. But it's usually not great for your health. If you want to have longevity, it's better to do shorter races if you're going to do it at all. It's sort of like, you know, but, you know, there's some of the jokes here about people telling you about their marathons. Sometimes when people first join the church, they're very enthusiastic about God and Christianity and Adventism. And so I think we have to, you know, be cognizant of the other people who are not marathoners or who are not Seventh-day Adventists, and give them the message when they're ready for it. So sometimes it can, you know, we can turn people off when we come on too strong. And I think many of you may have this opinion. In that, in the last 6 miles of the race, every time I run, that's the thought that we think in our head is like, why didn't Pheidippides die at mile 20 so the race would be shorter? Because the last 6 miles are just brutal. There's other things you can do. Doing an exercise plan is setting up a time. I think that's been the biggest barrier for me over the years, is setting a block of time. And so now I specifically write it down, and it's like a goal, like I have to do this. The other thing that's helped me is that I don't run every day anymore, because my body can't take the running and the pounding every day. So I actually cross-train on the other day. So I have that on the right, this thing called an elliptigo. It kind of mimics running. It's really goofy looking. But I do that on the off days. And because I've broken my arm so many times, I do that only indoors. I don't ride it outside, for those of you wondering. And then the other thing that I got from running is when you're running competitively, sometimes your mind can be your worst enemy. And so sometimes you overthink stuff, and we're great at rationalizing stuff. So a lot of times when you're in a race and you've given all you got and you're tired, you'll say in your head, well, I'll just slow down here and then I'll sprint that last lap. But that usually doesn't happen. So I think one mantra I used to think when I ran, we had a sports psychologist, is I would just have this little mantra in my head, don't think, just run. And I think that's oftentimes what bothers us as Christians, why we don't get baptized or why we don't witness to other people, is we have that little thing in our head telling us, like, oh, what if I do this, or what if I offend this person or do that? And so that's hard to overcome. I still struggle with that today. But I think letting the Holy Spirit flow through you is the way to go. And so I love these verses from Psalm. Basically, let the Holy Spirit run loose and free in you. Let it go. One of the greatest compliments and great days at work happened to me a couple years ago. One of my medical assistants I don't really work with regularly, just she's always a joy and very helpful, always helping others, came up to me after a shift one day, and she goes, you know, Dr. Anzai, can I ask you a personal question? And I said, yeah, sure, I guess. She goes, are you a Christian? And I said, yes. And she goes, yes. And she goes, I knew it. And so I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I'm really reflecting, you know, what God wants us to do. But then a couple days later, one of my colleagues who actually knows me pretty well, one of the other doctors, I gave the Blue Zone talk, and he came up to me and he goes, I didn't know you were a Christian. And so, you know, it's how we live our life, right? So it makes you think, like, we're modeling all this stuff all the time to other people. And then as I close up here, just want to reiterate, you know, life is, this has almost become a cliche, but this guy named Amby Burfoot is a longtime writer and editor for Runner's World. He wrote, you know, life is a marathon, not a sprint. Pace yourself accordingly. On the bottom left is when Amby was 22 years old. He ran the Boston Marathon and won it in 2:22, which at that time was really fast. And then the picture on the right is 50 years later. He's still running at age 72, and his goal was to break 5 hours, and he ran 4:59. So I thought that was pretty awesome that he was able to do that. But I love Isaiah. You know, as we progress through life, you know, I realize I'm not going to be able to run my whole life, and you know, but staying active and asking God for for giving us the wings like eagles so we can be renewed, even if you can't walk anymore, and even if you can't exercise. But just, I think the bigger picture is, you know, staying active and never giving up that hope and the faith, and also witnessing to God. How we act and how we treat others is the message that everyone sees for us to witness. Just a epilogue on my story, and this is kind of the quote up there's a mashup of Ecclesiastes and Matthew, but that was my dad and I in 1985, and in 2022 he came a couple months ago up to Sacramento to see my son's graduation. When he retired from the military, I told him, you know, Dad, you're a hospital administrator. You should like go work at a private company, and you can make a lot of money, and you know, rise up because of all your experience. But he told me, you know, that's not, I mean, I was good at that, but that's not really my passion. So he actually went back to school and became a teacher and a coach. And so he coached for many years. He retired from teaching, but he still is coaching kids in high school now. So that's his passion. And so this was recently in the pandemic. He was kind of freaking my mom and sister out, because during the pandemic he still early on wanted to go out and work with the kids. So you know, I think the first year we had him like not do that, but you know, after that we're like, yeah, you got your vaccine, go ahead. And so he's out there with these young kids and taking them to meets and stuff at the age of 81. And so, again, I'm a sucker for the Nike ads. There really is no finish line in our journey. As Christians, we have to live this day by day. And the thing I ask of you is, if you're not doing this already, both exercise-wise, but also in your walk with God, you know, what's holding you back? You know, the biggest, I think, hardest thing to do is to take that first step and to make a plan for it. And to make it more simple, the Nike ad, just do it. God has set up this race for us, and let's run. Let's do it. And my last slide, he's at the finish line already. He's given us the prize. Jesus, you know, he gave his son. The question is, are we ready for it?